It put the book out to the world. So much magic has come into my life as a result. If you ever feel helpless or lost, ask yourself this. It will guide you to choice and action. Am I in light or darkness? When I notice myself lost in thought, I ask myself this question. If the answer is light, great. I ramp up the thoughts and enjoy them. By the way, the more you love yourself, the more you find yourself here. If it's fear, anger, righteous stories, hurt, it's all darkness. There is no way to fight it or push it away. That only makes it stronger. That only pulls me away from the present moment. So I return to what I know works. I pull out my rag, wipe my window. I go to the 10 breaths of loving myself. Sometimes, this shifts me from darkness right away. Sometimes, it takes many more breaths, all depending on how entangled I was in my thoughts. But it works. Try this. Question. You might be tempted to use all three, but I'll caution against it. If you're not used to asking and answering questions in the moment, multiple options will cause the mind to hesitate. That's often enough time for old loops to slip through. A question is another light switch. You just have to get in the habit of flipping it. Once you've deepened the groove and it becomes natural, then add the others. Start with this. If I love myself truly and deeply, what would I do? It's easy to remember and applies to pretty much any thought or situation. Just this alone will improve the quality of your life. Here's how to deepen the groove. Pick one thing that's important to you. It could be a relationship, it could be your health, a personal or business goal. Then, ask yourself the question every time you're involved in the activity. For example, if it's health, whenever you're about to eat, ask yourself, if I love myself truly and deeply, what would I do? The answer will shift you away from old patterns to choice, then action. Once it starts to feel natural, use it for other areas of your life. I've used this question in writing this manual. My commitment is to give it everything I've got. So, whenever I get tempted requests that pull me away from writing, I ask myself, if I love myself truly and deeply, what would I do? Then, I live the answer. Questions, more than anything, will steer you away from what doesn't serve you, both in your mind and in your life. The next level. We first started the group by saying, I love myself, with the in-breath, and releasing whatever arose with the out-breath. Then, we dug deeper and added feeling. This shifted us away from darkness to light. There's another level. You'll be ready for it once you notice your out-breath change. It will feel cleaner, more peaceful. It's time to dig deeper again. With the out-breath, say, thank you, with feeling. After all, if you're loving yourself and experiencing magic, gratitude is a natural response. Who or what the gratitude is for is up to you. What matters is the feeling of gratitude itself. Once again, it's simple to do. Say, I love myself with the in-breath. Say, thank you with the out-breath. And feel the emotion of each. Do this for the mental loop, meditation, and mirror. When you breathe in light and breathe out gratitude, it leaves no space for darkness. Do this enough, and eventually, this loop starts to run on its own. That's where you want to be, where love and gratitude are natural expressions of each breath. It's beautiful to experience. You might be tempted to start here, and you're welcome to try. It's your life, and the only results that matter are yours. But here's what I've learned. If you jump in hard, the mind rebels equally harder. Those hallucinated snakes fight dirty. But if you go step by step, there is less resistance. The process is gentler, and you're more likely to succeed. I got here by starting the groove, observing what rose inside, then deepening it in whatever way felt natural. No map needed. Just like every other human, I was already wired for love. Once I accepted this, the groove practically dug itself. Rituals. In basic training, before we entered our barracks, we had to do 20 push-ups. It didn't matter if you were exhausted and had to go in and out all day. Before you went inside, you did your push-ups. We had a whole series of these. From the range to the cafeteria, there were always push-ups and pull-ups to be done. These alone probably got more than a few recruits in shape. Months after, anytime I entered a building, I still had to suppress the urge to drop down and give 20. That ritual had been hardwired into me. I took this concept and applied it to the practice. This took what I knew I should do and put it on autopilot. For example, whenever I sit down to write, I close my eyes, breathe deep, and feel love for myself. I feel gratitude for the words that are to come. And, since the mental loop grows stronger each time, it shifts me from loving myself, and the words flow. Meditating in the morning, 10 breaths before entering my building, 10 breaths of waking and before sleep, all rituals I've created for myself. You don't waste minutes each morning wondering whether you should brush your teeth or not. You just do it. That's the power of rituals. They create the grooves we call habits. And these habits, both good and bad, run our lives. Create love yourself rituals for your morning, your bedtime, and whatever you repeat during the day. Anything from eating to business meetings. The more you add the practice to your natural rhythm, the more it becomes a part of you. Please don't skip this. Rituals are a practical application of your vow. Without them, you will most likely find yourself putting off what you need. Without rituals, we risk letting what should come first come last. In fact, if you're ever going through a rough patch, dial up your rituals. Meditate more than once. Do the mirror every chance you can get. Make your day a constant practice of the 10 breaths. This will help pull you out. Track. An object at rest stays at rest unless acted upon by a force. This is Newton's first law of motion, sometimes called the law of inertia. A rocket on a pad will stay there forever unless the boosters are ignited. Same in loving ourselves. The vow is the energy needed for liftoff. But how do you keep the rocket going? In our case, how do you continue loving yourself once the initial excitement has worn off? How do you do the practice when responsibilities get in the way or you just don't feel like it? Simple. You track yourself. Get a calendar, and at the end of each day, check off the various parts of the practice you've done. If you hit your full commitment, put a big X through that day. There is a deep sense of satisfaction at seeing an unbroken string of X's. Our minds are experts at crafting stories on why slipping is justified. These are old mental loops fighting for survival. That's why being accountable outside ourselves works. No matter the excuse, empty squares in a calendar don't lie. They make us face the truth on where we're falling short. I didn't do this when I first started, but later, as life started to work and I got lazy and coasted, I found that the act of tracking naturally made me step up. It was that easy. Besides, it's better to correct yourself before life does. By the time life intervenes to get your attention, the wake-up call is usually painful. Line in the sand. No matter how intense the vow, no matter the tracking, odds are that along the way, we will slip. We'll miss parts of the practice. We'll get lazy and coast. It's important to be honest with ourselves about this and plan for it. First, don't beat yourself up. I've yet to see a photo of a human being under the headline, perfect. To fall and get up is a part of the contract of being alive. Second, pick something in the practice that you will not skip, no matter what. This is your line in the sand. It is the bare minimum you will do to keep your vow. The meditation is my line in the sand. No matter how the day unfolds, I won't go to sleep without doing it. This way, even if I fail at keeping my full commitment to myself, at least I kept the most important part to me. And that allows the momentum to continue. Then, the next day, I return to the full practice. These lines in the sand keep momentum going. Meditation once a day. Mirror once a day. 10 breaths of the mental loop 10 times a day. Pick one that feels most powerful, then do it. But remember, return to the full practice as soon as you can. That's where magic happens fastest. In a nutshell, there you have it. Forgive yourself, make your vow, and do the practice. All from the inside out. There is no perfection here. No forcing or trying to make anything happen. Only commitment and allowing. Letting light enter, doing what it does. We are all capable of this. No matter what we've experienced in our lives, we are all hardwired for love. I've come to believe that living this way taps us into the flow of life. Rather than fight or struggle, we go with the natural evolution of things. Perhaps that's why not only our inside shifts, our outside does as well. After you forgive yourself and make your vow, do the practice for a month straight. That's what it initially took for my life to transform. This works for readers I've spoken with as well. When we attach our commitments to time, they suddenly become real. And as a result, far more likely to happen. So hold yourself accountable to your vow for 1 month. Track yourself, pick your line in the sand, and create your rituals. Go all in. It's only 1 month to love yourself truly and deeply and transform your life. The rest of this manual includes what I've added to loving myself over the years. Use what feels right, but keep the practice as your foundation. Childhood strings. I've always had a difficult time with breakups. It's as if, at the end of each relationship, I forget my own value and devolve. It's a deeply entrenched groove, which is why an alternative groove through a consistent practice is a must. Otherwise, the mind returns to the suffering it knows. While doing the meditation, I realized why I had this groove. My father was abusive to my mother. After one especially bad episode, she went grocery shopping and didn't return. We planned this out, she and I. When my father went to sleep, I'd sneak out with my little brother and meet her around the corner. My father caught me. I still remember that moment, looking down those stairs, the locked door so far away. I tried escaping multiple times, no luck. Then one afternoon, my father took us to meet her at the park. We sat on a bench while he convinced her to return, but he wouldn't let me touch her. I will never forget that feeling, that ache of wanting so badly to reach out, to have her hold me. Any surprise I lose it after the end of a relationship? In those moments, it's not this grown adult who has his act together and knows how life works. It's that little boy pulling the strings, desperately needing love. But no one else can fill that for him. No relationship, no object, no substance or escape. Only I can. So the last time this happened, I turned inward, closed my eyes, and pictured him. Then I held him and loved him. Just loved him. And you know what? That's all he needed. He calmed down. Whenever he tugs again, I do the same. It's another opportunity to love a piece of me. We all have our weaknesses. This happens to be one of mine. Yours might be different, but the themes are the same. We're human, and the primal threads of love and fear bind us all. Whatever childhood strings you discover within yourself, first, accept them. They're a part of your personal history. They made you this amazing, beautiful human being that you are. Second, love that part of yourself. In the present, Give yourself what you needed in the past, and you will understand the truth. You are what you needed all along. Try this. Childhood strings. Step 1. Sit or lie down somewhere quiet. As always, if you can, choose a place that makes you feel good. Step 2. Close your eyes and do the mental loop. Breathe in love. Breathe out whatever comes. Let light flow in from above. Do this until you feel a natural rhythm. Step 3. Place your hand over your heart. The same heart once beat for your younger self. Step 4. When you are ready, picture the child in front. If emotions rise from either of you, be patient and let them flow. Step 5. Feel your heartbeat for a little while. It belongs to you both. You are in sync. Step 6. Then, give the child your love. You can hold the child and say, "I love you, I love you, I love you." You can stand apart and do it. You can feel light flow through you and into the child, dissolving all that needs to go. You can be silent, or you can speak your love out loud. The details don't matter. The only thing that matters is your intention to give this child love, to give it all the love you've got. Step 7, don't be surprised if long suppressed emotions rise. Release them and be free. Step 8, there's nothing to solve, nothing to fix, nothing else to do. Once you've given your love and feel calm, open your eyes. Step 9, feel your heartbeat again for a little while. Then, you're done. Here's a suggestion. Why limit this to your childhood self? There's nothing stopping you from giving love to who you were last year or even yesterday. This is especially helpful if you've recently gone through something difficult. Give your past self the love you needed. It's one of the most powerful things you can do. Your future self. One day, after giving my younger self love, I asked myself, "Someday, I'll be older and wiser. What would that man say to me today?" The question made me sit up, excited. My future self who's been through everything I have and beyond, who has the benefit of hindsight that I don't, who has love and compassion for me in a way that only one who's walked in my shoes can, who understands me better than anyone ever could. The answer was obvious. He would do exactly what I just did for my younger self. So I closed my eyes, did the mental loop, and imagined him standing in front. He smiled a loving and understanding smile. And then he hugged me, kissed the top of my head, and gave me love. There was nothing for me to do, only to receive love. My love. Do this. Giving love. If I'm ever having issues with someone I care for deeply, I do the mental loop, imagine myself holding this person close, and then I kiss the top of their head and give them love. That's it. This shifts me from anger, hurt, or resentment. Darkness, all. Light flows through, healing whatever I hold between us. It reminds me of what matters. When you do this, remember one thing. The point is to shift yourself, not the other person. And don't ever fear that by giving love, you will have less for yourself. Love is not a beggar's bowl. Love is a deep well connected to life itself. The more it flows through you, the more it transforms you, and the more you receive in return. Parachute. Sometimes, loving ourselves can be the hardest thing to do, especially if we're caught up in suffering. If you find yourself there, tell yourself this: life loves me. If you believe in God, then replace life with God. or just make life that single spark that resulted in billions of galaxies and ultimately, you. This connects you to something bigger than you. Tell yourself this again and again and again. In fact, set everything aside and meditate, using this as the loop. As you breathe in, receive the light. Imagine what you're saying to be true. Be in the place of how that feels. This is important. Don't just say it intellectually, experience it. Release everything that comes with the out-breath. Repeat this until the only thing that arises when you breathe out is a simple, thank you. When you finish with the meditation, return to that place in your head every chance you get, even if it's for 10 breaths. Do it until it's your dominant thought. This is a parachute. It will help you. Even if you don't believe it for a single second, it will help you. Parachutes work regardless of your beliefs on gravity and air resistance. First, it will distance you from the disempowering stories of the mind. Second, it will take you outside yourself and to the statistically remarkable gift of just being alive. Third, it will remind you of your own worthiness to be loved. Once you have shifted, return to loving yourself, but use this anytime you need. Higher. I believe that we are part of something bigger than us, like sparks of a great fire. Loving myself showed me that. Too much outside my scope of control shifted in my life for me to rationalize it away. You don't need to believe what I do. Life works the way it does, regardless. But I want to share how I've used this to take the practice to a higher level. In the last chapter, I give you a parachute. I use the same principle here, but rather than waiting until I need it, I mix it in with loving myself. Here's what I do. I close my eyes, feel light envelop me from above, and with each in-breath, I say, I love myself a few times. Then, I shift to bigger than me loving me. You can call it life or God or the universe or whatever sits right with you. I shift the phrases back and forth on instinct. Most importantly, I let myself feel what it would be like if I loved myself. Plus, I was loved by all that is. It's absolutely beautiful to experience. With the out-breath, I release whatever comes. But I make sure that by the time I'm done, the out-breath gives a natural thank you. That's it. You can do this with the mental loop, meditation, and mirror. Your groove will deepen. Repeat. Let's imagine that you've forgiven yourself. You've made the vow. You've gone all in. You live, breathe, and eat the practice daily. You realize that you won't do it perfectly each day. What matters is your intention and consistency over time. Perhaps you beat yourself up when you slipped here and there, but you've let that go. After all, beating yourself up isn't the most loving thing to do. You have shifted on the inside. Your life has shifted on the outside. You are zinging. The month is up. I have a question for you. If you loved yourself truly and deeply, what would you do? My suggestion? Don't stop. Please. The grooves of the past are strong. Don't let them regain a foothold in your consciousness. Recommit. Deepen the groove of loving yourself. The more you do this, the more it'll become a part of your being, of who you are. Do the whole process again. Forgive yourself, make your vow, and do the practice. If this sounds like work, it isn't. A month will have shown you magic. Accept that as your new normal and build from there. One more month of loving yourself, a higher normal, and then another month. Imagine a year of this. You will not recognize your life. I promise you that. If it scares you. One of the most transformative lessons of loving myself has been this. If it scares me, there is magic on the other side. I cannot emphasize this enough. If there's ever a rule for life, this is it. Look, any of us could fill a book with our fears and all the perfectly legitimate and beautifully crafted reasons for them. But they don't serve us. Only stepping through fear does. Here is what loving myself gave me. I recognized fear for what it was. Hallucinated snake, not useful, not real. Then, I loved myself and stepped through. Each time, magic. Even if life didn't give me the exact result I was hoping for, stepping through fear led me down paths that were equally rewarding, if not better. Usually better. This practice of stepping through fear again and again taught me that fear is not something to always be avoided. It's a signal, just like any other, perfect for avoiding burning infernos or 1,000-foot plummets. But outside of that, it's a sign toward where magic is. And life requires me to step through. I don't know why, but that's just the way it is. Try this for yourself. Step through your hallucinated snakes. It's a practical application of loving yourself. Each day, pick one and step through. Sometimes you'll have to step through the same fear a gazillion times. Doesn't matter. You're deepening the groove. You're becoming a person who steps through fear. Step through until it's more of who you are than who you're not. Until it's a natural habit. And don't forget to enjoy the magic on the other side. You've earned it. Expect magic. When I first started the practice, I got better on the inside. Then, life got better on the outside. I started to experience synchronicities that I couldn't explain. The most honest way to state it is this. Life just started to work. The more I loved myself, the more life worked out for me in ways I couldn't have planned. I had to use the word magic to describe this. There was no better word. The more this happened, the more I started to expect magic. It was no different than expecting the sun to rise in the morning. It became my new normal. But here's the thing. You don't have to wait for life to show you magic. In fact, go all in on loving yourself and then expect magic. When you look for it, it will find you. But it helps to notice it when it starts, rather than chalk it off to coincidence or worse, pay no attention. Life rewards you more when you pay attention to its gifts. Cliché as this sounds, I found it to be true. Our attention is like a spotlight in the darkness. What we focus on becomes our experience of reality. Simply put, what you expect, you receive. Want to take this to the next level? Then feel grateful when you experience magic. Want to take it even higher? Feel grateful before you experience magic, just expecting it. Then watch life pour it on you. I'm not saying this because it sounds good. It really works. Just try it. None of this is rocket science. If you've lived life, I'm willing to bet you've experienced the same. So, if you loved yourself truly and deeply, what would you do? Me? I'd expect magic and feel grateful for it. I hope you do the same. One last thing. When I came up with the Love Yourself practice, it was an attempt to save myself. I'm so fortunate that it worked. But what I didn't expect was the rebirth it gave me, how it transformed my life. Look, life is short enough. We are but a brief flash of light, and then we're gone. During our time here, we only have one job, to shine brilliantly. I say that because you exist, you must shine. Do it for yourself. Do it for the sheer experience of it. Do it for the ones you love. Do it for whatever you believe in, but just do it. And when you love yourself, you naturally shine. So use this manual to love yourself truly and deeply. If you fall short, so what? You're human. Get up, dust yourself off, and love yourself even more. In return, life will. Part 3, The Lesson. Intro. 6 years after learning to love myself, I fell. The fault, purely mine. I'd spent the previous 2 years coasting, focusing on problems, reacting to life rather than being proactive from the inside out. Eventually, the practice became an afterthought. I couldn't remember the last time I'd made the vow, let alone gone all in. The self-love grooves I'd built were strong enough to run the show for a while, but the grooves of the past run deep. Slack off long enough, water flows down those channels again. My mind started to show the results, then my life. Yet, I coasted. Laziness has its own momentum. And the longer I coasted, the more I avoided what I needed most. The ego is tricky that way. Then, an unexpected breakup with a woman I loved dearly. I fell hard. Here's the good thing about falling. Your ego drops faster than you. So it's easy to give it up. And I did. The shame of letting this happen, of being the one person who should have known better, of not living what I literally wrote a book about. I had to save myself, so I gave it all up. I returned to the practice, brick by brick, pathway by pathway, groove by groove, loving myself all over again. But often, even though I knew what the next step was, I fought it. Truth be told, I was punishing myself for failing this badly. Despite my resistance, despite making it harder than it needed to be, despite getting in my own way, the practice still worked. In less than a month, I was transformed. Loving yourself works, period. This section, The Lesson, is that deeply personal story. Every single word, like the rest of the book, is true. My biggest weakness, and one many readers have shared with me as well, is that once things get good, I start to coast. I'm sharing this experience with you so that you don't. You'll see me fall, claw my way up, and then rise using the same principles that once saved my life. You'll also understand the nuances of the journey. I believe that these will help you. Sometimes, we learn more from the mistakes of others than their successes. Don't be surprised if you find this to be the most useful section of the book. 1. I come home on a red eye. I could have taken an easier flight, but I wanted to return to her. I've been away a week and a half. On the ride into the city, I watch glass buildings in the financial district glow under the morning sun. I smile. I open the door. She comes and hugs me, but not the way she normally does, where it's a run to me and holding tight. She leans into me, her grip weak. "What's wrong?" I ask. She's been up all night, crying. She's leaving me. She needs time and space. Not ready for commitment. Doesn't desire me. Doesn't feel for me the way I do for her. "It's not you," she says. "It's me." The world spins. Like I'd walked in, stepped on a rug, and she bent down and ripped it off the floor. There I am, feet in the air, falling backward, slow motion. No control. And I can feel it. The floor inching closer and closer, and I know that when I hit it, I will shatter. A few days later, we make love. It is the most awkward of dances, knowing that the music stopped. When I'm close, she asked me not to come inside of her. It's the first time she's ever done that. I lie awake that night, my thoughts a mush, and I think to myself that if everything matters, this matters. She and I matter. Us matter. But if nothing matters, then neither does this. Perhaps there is wisdom in this. If nothing matters in this play called life, best to exit stage left. 2. Next night, I fantasize about breaking into a friend's apartment while he's out of town, grabbing his handgun from the glass case, slapping it together. Clip in, safety off. Barrel under my jaw, squeeze the trigger, done. Would I shut my eyes at the moment or leave them open? That's the cushion that keeps me up. That's the thought I fall asleep to. In the morning, I wake up remembering how I used to be. The magic. Something inside me says, return to what works. I shove it aside. 3. It is evening. I have dinner with friends that I almost cancel because I don't want to talk, but in the end, I go. I haven't seen them in forever and I love them. I take the 6 train uptown, listening to random motivational videos. Best to smother my mind with the opposite of my thoughts. On one video, the speaker says, there's only one choice. You must be the greatest you. He's got the southern twang of a preacher. Write it down and declare it as a decree multiple times a day. A decree. So old-fashioned. Hear ye, I hereby decree that I will be the greatest me. Just the thought makes me stand straighter. 4. Here's the good news, I say to her 3 days after a rug flip. I will die. You will die. The sun will eventually burn out. The moon will stop shining. And the earth will be a dull, lifeless rock. Pause for effect. The good news? None of this will have mattered. Later, I realize what happens when you don't care about anything. You become fearless of sorts. Not so bad. Then I flash to my friend's handgun and figure that this version of fearless isn't probably the best. Here's the rub about emotional pain. It's a real thing. You lose yourself in it. You could be tying your laces, and the next thing you know, all you have is memories and images and jumbled thoughts flashing through your mind. Like a train whirling by while you stand on the platform, feeling the blast of the wind. Except here, the wind is like a slash, cutting and slicing. Return to your present, my friends told me over dinner. Pain is when you're in the future in your head. I'd been telling them what she'd said that day, about the men she wanted to date after me. Then, I switch the subject to what I might do. Go off to Mexico or somewhere. Drop off the grid for a while. My friends are a long married couple, Cheryl and Michael. They smiled. One day at a time, honey, she said. Cheryl Richardson, one of the wisest women I've ever met. When you go to the future in your mind, just put your hand over your heart and say to yourself, I return to this. I return to this. I haven't tried it yet, but I know I will. I have to. 5. I try it. It's been a week since rug flip. I put my hand over my heart, feel it beat, and repeat, I return to this. Within a few seconds, I've changed the phrase and instead I'm saying, I return to me. I return to me. Later, in the shower, I close my eyes into the water and the train washes by. And anger rises within. Hand over my heart, thump thump, thump thump, I say to myself, I return to me, I return to me. And for that brief moment, the train disappears. 6. It's day 8 after rug flip. She hasn't moved out yet. It's the Christmas holidays and difficult to find a place last minute. After I shower and get dressed, I take my mousse to her and ask, can you? It's a ritual we had. She gently rubbed the foam in my hair, styling it, and I close my eyes and smile and feel so loved. She takes the can and does this while I stare into her eyes. I'm going to face this, I think. I will not run away. I stare at her, and when she finishes, she kisses me softly. Tomorrow, I'm getting a haircut, so I need this. The day after, I will fly to San Francisco to see family. It hits me that today could have been the last time we ever do this. 7. My friend James calls and says that he'll keep his ringer on at night. I never do that, he says, but I want you to know that it's on for you. I've watched him go from heartache to heartache since I've known him, but the trend is this. He falls up. It's impressive. After each breakup, he does his daily practice hard. Eventually, his life is better than it ever was before. His daily practice is this, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. I will do this. I've seen it work wonders for him. For physical, I will work out every other day and eat clean and healthy. No alcohol, it's a depressant. For mental, I will write daily. I will take this pain and energy and create something from it. Also, at work, each day I will take the thing I've been putting off the most and get that done. This will move me forward. For emotional, I will spend quality time with at least one person a day. This will make me get out of my head. For spiritual, whenever I catch myself in my head, spinning and falling, I'll put my hand over my heart and return to myself. At night, lying in bed, I say to her, "You're in luck." Why? It's pathetic and whiny and I hate saying it, but I do it anyway. Because you only have one more night of this. "Don't say things like this," she says. "Don't do things like this," I say. She grows quiet. I lie in darkness, head spinning, and I place my hand on my heart and softly I say to myself, "I return to me. I return to me. I return to me." 8. It's the day before my flight. She's found a place and will move out while I'm in San Francisco. I wake up wishing this day didn't exist, that I could just wipe it away. While she's out, I call Cheryl. "I need you to remind me of truths," I say. She toured with Oprah for a year. Wise doesn't even begin to describe her. She has a level of seeing what is real that's unparalleled, and I desperately need that. "Heartbreak triggers old abandonment," she says. "It's the little child who experienced it, and we all do, and is terrified. At that age, your parents are everything, and the sense of abandonment means death." This stops me. I feel like it's me that's suffering, not a long-forgotten child. But what she says, even if it's a tiny fraction of this, it rings true. Your child needs to know that it can trust you, that you got it. That is what you must do. Each moment it hurts bad, each time you create dramatic thoughts about the future, go to your heart. Place your hand there and tell it, "I got you." That's all it needs. When I get off the phone, I do it. "I got you. You can trust me. I got you. I got you." I go to the gym. I see a man working out hard and say to him, "Impressive." We've run into each other before, just never talked. He comes over, grins, and pulls out his phone to the gym's website. "Look," he says, "that's me." He's the highlighted member of the month. On the left, photo of an out-of-shape guy. On the right, present-day him, muscled. "Impressive," I say again. "Transformation takes work," he says. I stare at him stupidly. "Can you repeat that?" "Transformation, it takes work." "Quote of the week, man," I say to him. "Quote of the week." When I spoke with Cheryl earlier, she said, "You have one of the best hearts on the planet." I took it in. What's it going to take for me to believe it? Does God have to part the heavens and smack boom it down to me? Or a deathbed realization? To be reborn, you must die first. And this sure feels like death. I'm done downplaying what those I respect see in me. "Protect your heart," she said. "Give it what it needs." I will. No matter what it takes, I will. 9. The problem with heartbreak is that it feels like it will never end. You're plummeted by emotions and memories and projections, and just when you're strung out, another wave smacks into you and goes on and on. She returns from her errands, hugs me. "My love," I say, something we always called each other. She steps back and smiles, quiet. "That's enough. Ripping this bandaid off will hurt, but I must do it." I tell her what Cheryl said about my heart. Then I say, "I need to save this heart. I don't know how or if I'll be able to, but I need to save it." She nods. I know she loves me, but her mind is set. "I'm going out," I say. "I have a haircut at 5. I'll be back by 6. I want you to leave and not be here when I come back, because when I return, I need to feel and write and pack and face this heartbreak." The color on her face shifts. I fly out tomorrow morning. You can come back then. And when you move your stuff out, don't leave me anything. No note, no gifts, no record of us, nothing. I can tell she wasn't expecting this. I know the lessons you think you're going to learn, I say. And I also know a couple other lessons you learned that you didn't want to. That's yours. Saving my heart, it's my responsibility. I stand close, stare deep into her. This is a man who would have stood by your side all your life. You have no idea what love is. Then, I can't help myself. If you decide that this is the heart you want, then reach out. Neither of us blinks. Last thing, I say, it's the only thing I really ask of you. Wear your helmet. She loves biking in the city, and I always bugged her to wear a helmet. I still love her deeply. Nothing's changed for me except one thing. I'm going to save myself. I grab a jacket and walk out, not looking back. I take the stairs rather than waiting for the elevator. They lead me to the basement and I have to walk up to the third floor and take the elevator down, making me feel a little foolish, but I don't care. I walk out into the evening, walking straighter than I have in a while. 10. You're a magnificent man, Cheryl once told me. It blew my mind that someone I admired and respected so much thought that of me. I wish I'd believed her down to my core. I decide that I will create a file, put in every sincere compliment I receive, and then repeat it to myself as truth. It is a gift that others have given me. If they see me as this, what right do I have to not see them myself? So, I start the list. 1. I am a magnificent man. 2. I have one of the best hearts on the planet. 11. I return at 6:16 p.m. In the elevator, I find myself hoping that she stayed. For whatever reason, even if it was for a better goodbye. But as I walk to my apartment, hope evaporates and I know. I open the door to our dark apartment. She left the candle lit by the window. If it wasn't for the circumstances, I would enjoy the ambiance. I storm in, blow the candle out, and scream at the ceiling. Every single piece of me wants to explode. Then I lie on the couch and stare at the walls in a stupor until I doze off. When I wake up, I change the home screen photo on my phone. It used to be one of her, staring into the camera, her face tilted, smiling. I replace it with a lotus opening to the morning sun. Then I mindlessly scroll through Twitter until I stop at a photo posted by Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. It's one of his infamous early morning workouts. Sweaty, grimacing, he's going full out on the lotus squat bar. This is a man who, in his early 20s, was cut from the Canadian Football League. His dreams of going on to a career in the NFL dashed. On that long ride home in his father's pickup truck, he leafed through his wallet to find $7 to his name. He sat around in his parents' apartment for 2 weeks, feeling sorry for himself. Then he was done. Time to reinvent himself. He went into professional wrestling, starting from scratch, and gave it everything he had. The result, one of the most successful careers in professional wrestling ever. At the height of his fame, he left to become an actor. Each time he reinvented himself, he used the same playbook. He committed, he went all in. After his early movies failed and he was written off, he still stayed true to his vision. Today, he's a blockbuster movie star. His movies consistently break records all over the world. And the name of his film studio? 7 Bucks Productions. I scroll through his feed. Photos of him with fans, photos of him on set, photos of him working out, always grinning. He's devoted to his wife and daughters,